Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Now available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
The Steve Austin Show is brought to you free today by our friends at BetOnline. The football season is over, but the NBA, NHL, and college basketball seasons are only heating up. That means some of the best odds in sports betting are yours for the taking. Get in the mix at betonline.ag and use the promo code PODCAST1 for your 50% welcome bonus. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts and exclusive partner of Podcast One Sportsnet.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
From Hollywood, California, by way of the Broken Skull Ranch, this is the Steve Austin Show.
Give me a hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Now, here's Steve Austin.
All right, everybody, welcome to Steve Austin Show. I am coming to you from the Broken Skull Ranch out here in Nevada, damn near in the middle of nowhere. Felt good to get out of damn Los Angeles for a couple of days. We'll be heading back here directly in about a day or two. Start work on projects. Start work on Straight Up Steve Austin here in about a month and a half. I'm looking forward to this season. It will be season two. We will be traveling a little bit across the United States of America. I'm sure we will be flying to some of those locations we're going to. But, man, I might just haul ass in my pickup truck, put my toy hauler in the back, and drive just so I can get some miles in on that sumbitch and drive across the United States of America. I have been wanting to do more traveling, and if we're going to film this show and I can make some of these things in my pickup truck, that's what I'm going to be doing. So stay tuned. I'm thinking Straight Up Steve Austin. I'll report to you in a little bit as the date gets closer, but I think those episodes will start airing in about August. And thank you for all the support for season one. Hey, man, Broken Skull IPA is growing everywhere. We are going to hit about, I think, 8 or 10 more states this year in 2020. And, yes, if you're listening in Texas, we're trying to get over there ASAP. Thank you. Much love to the East Coast for being so supportive and receptive to Broken Skull IPA. I consider it the best IPA in America. And, God dang, man, I'm going to have one when I get through doing this podcast, as a matter of fact. But go to the ElSegundoBrewing.com website. Click on Broken Skull IPA. There's an interactive map, and it'll take you or show you wherever Broken Skull IPA is sold, and you can find a location nearest you. We're all over Southern California, Whole Foods and Total Wine, and a few more other locations carry that, but shit, it's all over the place. But, man, I tell you what, it's good to get out of Los Angeles for a couple of days, and we're not staying here very long. We basically drove down here to pick up our RV so we could take it back to Los Angeles and sell it and get a toy hauler. We ain't got the toy hauler yet. We got to sell this sumbitch first. But it was good to get out there and get on the road and try to get a breath of fresh air. And one of the things I did was get on my buggy, my Kawasaki KRX 1000, and shit, I put about 150 miles on that thing. It got me a windshield, some bumpers, some lights, all kind of accessories. So thank you to the good folks over there at Kawasaki of Reno for hooking me up. John, I appreciate it. I've been really enjoying that buggy, and that thing is probably the ultimate side-by-side, in my opinion, anyway, but nonetheless, hey, man, my guest on today's show is a very interesting fella. Got introduced to him by my good friend Gregory Irons. And he said, hey, man, you ought to have this guy on your show. He's in Los Angeles. Here's some of his work. And he sent me an email. And I watched about 10 of this guy's matches, his scientific style and also some deathmatch style wrestling. And Ricky Shane Page is my guest. And Ricky's been working for about 17 years. Good kid, hell of a worker. I hadn't heard much of him because he's on the indie scene, but this guy, he can work his ass off. And, you know, the deathmatch stuff is extremely dangerous. God dang, a good guy has a high tolerance to pain, to say the least. But I enjoyed my conversation with him. Good cat. I'm glad I got a chance to hook up with him. And if Ricky Shane Page comes back to Los Angeles, he's welcome to stop by my place any old time of the week. But I think you'll enjoy this show. I will say, man, I hadn't slept for about two, almost 3 days when I talked to Ricky Shane because I can't sleep worth a shit. So Sean Gosser, my new producer, he tightened me up as much as he could. But bear with me as I try to slug through this thing. I've got my sleeping under control. I don't know what happened. Somebody threw a monkey wrench in my system. and I couldn't sleep to save my life. But I got all that behind me now, especially now that I came out here to the Broken Skull Ranch, got a chance to ride my buggy around out here on these mountains and on these trails. I think I just needed to wind down and get the fuck out of Los Angeles for a couple of days, hearing all them sirens and all that bullshit. But all is good over here. I hope you enjoy the show. Coming up next week, Rob Van Dam just stopped by the house the other day. He's going to talk about a new documentary he has coming out. So stay tuned for RVD this coming Tuesday. And we go onwards and upwards from there. And if you have any suggestions, I've gotten many in my emails. If you have any suggestions, send them to questions at steveaustinshow.com. I have been getting a few requests or questions. Why don't you do more Q&As? We like when you do that. Hey, man, you got to send me some questions if you want me to answer them. I'm happy to do them, but if I don't have enough questions, I can't make a show out of it. And for those who have been asking about my illustrious wife, Kristen, being on the show, she would rather not. So it is me talking to my guests or me answering your questions. So please send those questions, and I appreciate your support here on the podcast. Ricky Shane Page. Deathmatch extraordinaire worker, scientific worker, hell of a hand, is my guest. Stop all this bullshit and let's roll this conversation. All right, I'm here at the studio with Ricky Shane Page, my guest today, guy who's been out on Indy Circuit for quite some time. Ricky, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
Actually, this is our fourth take. That was bullshit. Keep the language to a minimum. Riggy's on the young side. How are you?
I'm great. Never been better, actually.
Dude, I've been watching a lot of your matches, scientific and death match. Your body's taking a toll. How you feeling, man?
I'm okay. I'm doing all right. Probably shouldn't feel the way I do for being 35, but I'm okay. I can walk.
Well, you had a show here in L.A. last night. You guys were over there in Hollywood. We're over here in Marina Del Rey. How was the show last night?
Oh, it was great. The GCW shows are amazing. It's like one of the hottest indies going right now. And, like, the crowd's always really, really rowdy. And it was really fun. It was, like, a great show. They really love GCW and what they're doing, so like they're just always into it.
What's that crowd looking for? Are they looking for was it just regular wrestling matches last night, or was it deathmatch stuff?
It wasn't too much deathmatch stuff. There was some hardcore elements, but honestly, it's anything that they do. They have it all. They have guys like Blake Christian and Alex Zane that do the high flying that kind of stuff. Then they have the guys that do death matches like Nick Gage and myself, and they want anything. But like they do like the blood and guts there.
Hey man, you kind of specialize in the death match stuff, but you can work your ass off as well from a scientific standpoint. And it's like when I was first watching, like man, the death match guy, what's he gonna be up to? And you can work your ass off.
Thank you.
So I want to go on record as saying that. But it seems like you really have a thing for the deathmatch stuff. Going back to a match a couple of years ago when Will Ospreay had that match with Ricochet.
Yes.
They didn't know where the shit wind up watching when they saw that match because it was so spectacular. It was so technical and it was so precise. But then you had a lot of guys say, oh, man, I need Brody or Hansen or whatever. Where are you on the scale of, the high flyers?
I love them. I love that kind of stuff, and like I think it definitely has a place. I can't do it.
Yeah, I can't either.
You know, I do my little swanton. I can, I can do things that most bigger guys can't do, but like I can't do it to the level that they do it. I like wrestling. I want wrestling to be a buffet. I want someone to go to that show. There might be someone that goes to that show and be like, well, I don't really like that. It was a little too dancey for me or whatever. But then I come out and I'm fighting and bleeding, and they were like, oh, I like that. So like that's where I like that kind of. But I appreciate and respect that kind of wrestling because it's crazy to me that Ospreay and Ricochet can even do that.
Oh, it was amazing. When you were growing up, before you got into this, because you started in the backyard,
yes.
Like, what'd you cut your teeth on? What inspired you to want to be a wrestler?
Okay. So I watched wrestling when I was younger in the 80s, like Hogan and all that kind of stuff. And then I kind of fell out in the early 90s. It's like a lot of people did, that was the downtime in the business. Then Attitude Era came up, 97, 98. I started getting into it. I remember the exact moment. It was King of the Ring, 1998. Undertaker and Foley in the Hell in a Cell. As Foley was coming off the cage, mid-air, the thought went through my brain, I want to be a wrestler. And I remember it to this day. It was like mid-turn before he hit the table. And I was just like, I'm going to be a wrestler. And then, like, a year later, I started backyarding with some friends. And then, you know, 2 years after that, I had my first match.
Goddamn, me and Kane had to follow that match. And said, well, I was sitting there watching this. And I was like, man, this is spectacular. Ain't no way we're going to be able to follow that. And we didn't. So how'd you get started?
So I was backyarding and just, you know, messing around with my friends, just breaking stuff and, you know, wrestling on my dad's mattress in the backyard. And there was this indie company, and I'm using indie loosely. It was just basically a bunch of kids had a ring and got a building. And we started wrestling. We just showed them our backyard tapes, actually. And we started wrestling there. And I was too young to actually wrestle on indie shows because you have to be 18 to wrestle on shows in Ohio. So I was a manager for some of my other friends, and we were called the Garbage Pail Kids. And I just was doing that. And the first match I ever had, the ring broke. And they just sent – the promoter just sent us out there, and they were like, wrestle on the outside of the ring while we fix the ring. So it was me and three of my other friends. We wrestled this one guy named The Savage who did like a Kamala gimmick, and we just wrestled on the outside of the ring, and that was like technically my first match.
So what did you think about the business when you got into it?
Oh, I loved it. I remember the first time I saw a ring, like the corner post of a ring, and I got to get in it, like be in the ring, and it was like – it was the best day of my life, even though I was sore and beat up afterward, but like – I couldn't get enough of it. It was, you know, again, this was 2001. The business was crazy hot and everything. It was wrestling was everywhere. It engulfed, you know, our culture. So like, I loved it. I couldn't get enough of it. I just wanted to continue doing it and doing it and doing it. And I have never stopped since.
So you started for a little bit, then you went to kind of like a proper school 5 days a week learning.
Yeah. I went to, I trained at the Shooting Star Pro Wrestling School in Elyria, Ohio with Killer Chris Cole. After I'd been wrestling for a few years, kind of untrained, just doing like random stuff. And I went 5 days a week for like a whole year and just learned all the basics, like grinded it out. And because I knew I had to learn to properly do things, because I was kind of just figuring it out for myself, watching tapes, kind of looking at people's footwork and where they're putting their hands and, you know, kind of figuring it out. I naturally could figure some stuff out, but I knew I needed to go actually learn how to do it. And that's what I did. It was, and I'm really glad I did, because those basics are still with me.
Man, you're a hell of a worker in the ring when you're just going scientific. So I know you love that style of wrestling. But if I had to say to you, Riggy, you can pick scientific wrestling or deathmatch wrestling. Or are you going to go buffet on me and say you want a little bit of it all?
I mean, I'd probably say buffet, but as I'm getting older, the death matches take a toll. And I'm kind of like, I really like just wrestling and telling stories. I think it was just – that was the best way I could tell a story for a long time. But now that I'm getting older, I'm just kind of like, I think I can do more. And, like, I want more. I like wrestling, technical wrestling. But I do – I want to get wild every once in a while and bleed or jump off of something or go through a table. You know what I mean? So, like, I think – as I get older and I'm just keep wrestling, I'll probably calm down on the glass and the fire and the barbed wire. But I think it'll always be in me. I'll always get that itch to just get wild and get crazy. But I think nowadays I want to do more of like blow offs. Like if it's like a feud, I want to do a big death match and do it like that.
Man, when I watch your style in the ring, I don't know who you remind me of. I guess you remind me of a guy named Ricky Shane Page. But where would you say did you have any influences? I know, you know, Mick Foley just hit the cost, but and you kind of said earlier maybe all you guys wanted to be Mick Foley.
Yeah, a lot of us did. I mean, I think a lot of the deathmatch guys now, like the good ones, they wanted to be Foley. They wanted to be able to have that technical match with Shawn Michaels, but then they wanted to have that fireworks with Undertaker and get thrown off the cage. But they wanted to also be able to cut promos. You know what I mean? So like, Foley was a big influence for me. Raven was a big influence for me because I love ECW. A weird one, I say weird because every time I say it, people look at me funny. I love Stevie Richards. I don't know why. I thought he was great, and he played his role well in ECW as like Raven's little lackey, and he could wrestle. He was a really good wrestler. Yeah. Hayabusa, too, from FMW in Japan. I in my heart, am a cruiserweight. I'm just 6'4 and 300 pounds. Like, I can't do a 450. I want to do a 450 so bad. I just can't. So I think I just pick from everywhere. I just like wrestling. So, like, I take things that I like and I just go, oh, okay, I can kind of do that. And I think that's when you're really good at being a wrestler is when you know you can't do certain things. And so I know I can't do 450s, so I don't do it. You know what I mean? So, but I know I can kind of do a swanton, so I'll do the swanton. You know, you got to know what you're good at and know what you're not good at.
You still doing that top rope splash?
Every once in a while, I'll bust it out. I actually tore my PCL doing it one time, so like I backed off of it for a while. But yeah, I get up on the top rope a lot.
You still go back and forth to Japan?
I went to Japan 5 times in 2019.
Good.
Yeah, I don't have any trips planned. I think maybe the summer I should be going back. But yeah, I went 5 times this last year.
What about, did you spend any time over in England?
Yeah, I've been to England four times. I'm Pete Dunne, the Bruiserweight. Yeah. He's one of my best friends.
Hell of a worker.
He's phenomenal, probably one of the best. 6 years ago, him and another guy, Mark Andrews, who's also in NXT UK, they were like, you know, 19-year-old kids, and they wanted to come to America, and I knew them through Twitter, and I used to see some of their music videos from this little promotion they would run called Attack Pro Wrestling, and they were just tweeted, hey, we need somewhere to stay, and I was like, come on, I got a basement, stay in my basement. We became best friends, and they flew me out to England about 4 years ago for the first time, and I'm actually going to England on Wednesday. This coming up, I'm going doing a deathmatch tournament, and then I'm doing a couple shots after that.
Man, you seem to be, just from what I've watched of you and just your styles, whether it's deathmatch or your stuff, that's just regular wrestling in the ring, a student of the game. Am I right in my assessment?
I think so. I really like wrestling. It's been my entire life, like since the age of 16. This is all I've done. So like, I just watch stuff. I pick apart things like. I want someone to be like, hey, Ricky, we need you to do this. And I'll be like, okay, I can do that. I can be the funny comedy Stevie Richards guy. I can do the promos like Raven. You want me to go out there and get my ass kicked like Foley? Whatever you need me to do. You want me to be a babyface? You want me to be a heel? I want to be able to do everything. So like I try to pick part every aspect of the game. Recently, I've been really trying to work on my promos because like for a long time, I wore a mask, so I didn't talk. So like now I'm really like I've been doing a lot of promos and stuff lately because I want to get better at that part. I want to get confident in talking because I for a long time I wasn't.
So where do you think you're at right now with that?
Not where I want to be, but I think I can get there if I keep doing it, and that's why I'm pushing myself to do it.
But who is Ricky Shane Page, the guy that steps in the squared circle?
Oh man. I always say that I'm just like myself because I'm always kind of smiley and like I'm just happy. I love wrestling, so I'm like happy to be there. But, you know, when I have to be that bad guy, I think I put more of a smirk on and I'm kind of like real, especially what I'm doing right now in GCW. I'm like the big heel there. So like I put like a smirk on and I try to be cocky, you know, even though everybody's, you know, calling me a piece of shit and, you know. Tell, like, hey, you fat ass, like, wow, you know, it's typical heel stuff. And yeah. It's just like, I have to like keep that smirk on and just be above all of that. So like, I like that part. It's really challenging because I've never really been a heel either. Cause it's always kind of like, oh, bubbly babyface deathmatch guy, which doesn't make any sense. But like, that's just kind of always what I've been. But now I'm really going full tilt into the being a heel and I'm really enjoying it.
You have a preference for either one?
Oh, I like being a babyface.
God dang. That's tremendous. You're one of the first guys to sit across the table from me and say baby face.
Everybody says heel.
Yeah.
I like being a baby.
That's good.
I like selling. I do. I like being under and selling. I know, again, doesn't make sense because I'm big. You know, most people are always smaller than me, but I like selling. I'm better at fighting from underneath and selling and getting that sympathy. I'm better in that role. I don't know why. I just always have been. I like being a heel. I really enjoy what I'm doing right now. But if I had to pick, I'd be a babyface.
And most of the matches I'm watching of you, you're calling the match, and you call a good match.
Thank you. You
make a real concerted effort to protect your calls. There's attention to detail that sometimes is lost.
Yeah, I really. That's one of the big things I've been.
God damn it! That stays in the podcast. Boy, I just kicked this reclining chair back. I thought I was going to bust my ass. Ricky Shane Page, we're talking about protecting calls. Keep going, Ricky.
I'm there.
My dog Callie ran in. I've hit the stop button 5 times. We ain't stopping this son of a bitch no more.
I really like paying attention to detail.
Yeah.
I think those little small things add up to big things. And even if people don't catch them, if one person catches it, and they go, oh, that was smart. I like that. And then it adds up. It really does. And I think that's something that doesn't happen on the indies, because guys think that nobody's going to see it because it's not on TV every week or whatever. But if you do it, it'll add up and fans will catch on and they'll be like, oh man, he's really smart paying attention to that kind of stuff. Because fans are smart nowadays. Like the cover's off. Like they know, you know what I mean? So like if you give them those little things to look forward to and those little tiny details, they'll appreciate that. So yeah, I really try to do that.
Dude, and I agree with you 100%. To me, it's always about the details. And you know, like I don't sound like I'm beating a dead horse because I talk about it on so many podcasts, but I always say as a heel, you got to have a mean streak. As a babyface, you got to have fire. Well, those two basic things on each side, or one on each side. But also, man, you know, just in your presentation, whether it's pro style or, you know, you're rough around the edges, it needs to be a pro style presentation. What it don't matter if it's deathmatch or scientific, because there's bullshit and there's really well done stuff.
Yes.
And it's the attention to details, protecting the calls, stuff like that, and trying not to let, you know, don't tell or you don't want to just start moving around without some guy sending you in. You want it to happen as it's supposed to happen.
Yep.
Because if it looks like it's supposed to happen to me, then that's everything is lost.
Yep.
And I ain't going to say I was the best technician in the world, but I always try to protect my calls, never, you know, want to give anything away.
Yeah.
And, yeah, the business is kind of wide open. People know what's up. But you want to make – if Copperfield – everybody knows what he's doing is an illusion. But if you can see exactly what he's doing,
yeah,
how he's doing it, hey, much of an illusion.
If he's telling you how he's doing it while he's doing it,
yeah,
it loses the end result. But if you just kind of keep it – like you said, protect the call, keep it real and keep it – make sense as you're doing it, they'll forget that they know. So you have to do those little things. You have to make it look like a fight. You have to be a little bit raw. I think a lot of things, like I love that technical wrestling, the high flying, the Will Ospreay, Ricochet stuff, but a lot of times it's like too, it's super athletic. It's too athletic for me. I like a little grittiness to my wrestling.
Yeah, I'm a huge, you know, going back to, you know, I'm sure if you've been to Japan all them times, you've watched Brody and Hanson guys just beat the shit out of people. Man, I love that. And again, I appreciate the athleticism and everything that Ospreay and Ricochet did, but yeah, somewhere in the middle is kind of, well, it's kind of the stuff that I represented.
Yeah.
That brawler where, you know, most time things are going to look pretty good and you can't see through them. And so I want it to, yeah, it might be a work, but it should look.
It should look like a fight.
It should look like a fight.
At the end of the day, it's a fight. It's supposed to be a simulated fight. So don't just make it simulated. Make it a fight. You know what I mean? Like, make it look real. And if you do, people will pick up on that. I love when people are like, oh man, like, you know, we know about wrestling, but that guy hits people, or that guy is real. That guy doesn't pull his punches or whatever. I kind of like that kind of stuff where it's like, you don't know. Like, I want people to question. I want them to know, like, oh, what's, you know, they know who's winning and that. But it's like, but that guy got hit with a light bulb in the face. Like, you can't fake that. Like, that's a lot of things. People are like, what is that? What's that glass made out of? I'm like, it's a light bulb. It's a light tube that they just took out of the thing, and we just break it. Like, it's not fake.
Hey man, do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with GEICO. GEICO makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's GEICO easy. Visit GEICO.com today. That's GEICO.com.
The Steve Austin Show. The Steve Austin Show.
Hey, listen up. Do you purchase supplies for a small to mid-sized business? If so, Zorro.com needs to be your go-to resource. That's Zorro.com. At Zorro, you'll find all the things that keep a business running, no matter what kind of business you're in. All the tools, safety equipment, cleaning and maintenance supplies, office and shipping, automotive, industrial equipment, and more, all in one place, including the specialty items you can't find anywhere else. Whether you're shopping for an office, factory, contracting business, or machine shop, you can get exactly what you need. And when you shop at Zorro, you'll find brands you already know and trust. Brands like 3M, Prestone, Milwaukee Tool, Schneider Electric, and Proto, all at competitive prices. Want fast, free shipping? It's yours when you spend $50 or more. And if you ever have a question, a return, or need help finding exactly the right item, count on Zoro's customer service team based right here in the U.S. Plus, if you visit Zoro.com/Austin and sign up for Zmail, you can get 15% off your first order. Zoro.com. All you need to make your business go.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
Man, let's get to the death match.
All right.
I ain't never had one. You specialize in them.
Okay.
Bring me up to speed and the learning curve and the learning process. I know your first one was basically one.
Yeah.
But God dang, man. Talk about danger personified.
Yeah. There's tricks to everything. Like, it's just like regular, you know, wrestling. There's tricks to it. There's just an added element that it's glass, and there could something could go wrong. Because it's glass. You can't.
Well, yeah,
it's
you're talking about the glass,
wire.
But yeah. I'm talking about the whole shooting match. You're talking about barbed wire. You're talking about the light tubes. And
yeah.
You're talking about, well, I don't know, we'll put on one of your highlight tapes here in a minute, but the cinder blocks, the crazy falls. Oh, here's a question.
Okay.
When did shopping carts become a thing?
You guys did that.
I didn't. Somebody else did.
That was in the Attitude Era when the New Jack would come out or Al Snow.
Would push the shopping cart a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, that's where it came from. And also, you can just, you know, you can run down to Walmart, steal a shopping cart and just bring it in.
Yeah, but you guys are getting launched on to them, dude.
Yeah,
I've seen you take some suplexes and you get suplexed into them.
Yeah, yeah.
And they look like they hurt
a
lot.
They do. Because they're metal. Well, some of them are metal. But, you know, they're not made to give in. They're made to withstand being pushed around and, you know, and the whole grocery. So yeah, those are rough. All the deathmatch stuff is like pretty crazy if you really think about it. It's like, why, what are you doing? Like, you're breaking glass and getting thrown on shopping carts and like the gusset plates and things like that. Like, that stuff's it's crazy.
That's what those things are, those gusset plates.
The square, yeah, those things are crazy. They're basically like little tiny knives is the best way I can describe them. They're meant to hold up like A-frames of a house and stuff like that. Yeah, and I don't know where it came from. Probably Japan, to be honest, because they just get into weird stuff out there. I'm assuming that's where it started. The Kenzans too. I don't know if you've ever seen those. Like they're like flower arrangement things. They go in the bottom of flower arrangements and they put the stems into them so they stay a certain way. And they just pound them into your head. Those hurt. I had that happen in Japan. That's rough because you can't. You have to take a pair of pliers and pull them out of your skull. Like, there's no way to. You can't get it with your hand. So like, they had a pair of pliers and they put it on my head and pulled it out.
I was watching one of your matches. I can't remember who it was with, and you basically had a board. I don't know if the nail was in your head.
Oh, a carpet strip.
Carpet strip.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, there's like little tiny nails on those because they put them on the floor of like, you know, and then they nail the carpet to it. Yeah, and they just like pounded it in my head. Yeah.
Was it the match, I think, with Nick Gage you were working and you guys busted out the thumbtacks?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We did a 10,000, or was it 10,000? Maybe 20,000 thumbtack match?
I counted 20,001.
Okay, all right.
We got embellishes. Dude, I think a couple of times you had a mouthful of tacks.
Yeah.
And a couple of times y'all threw them at each other.
I mean, yep.
God dang, dude, have you ever swallowed a freaking tack?
You know what? I haven't. Luckily, I have not swallowed one. That's like much easier than it looks, actually. Like, it's never gotten like stabbed or anything. I've never swallowed one. I don't know. It's, again, I think what I like to do when I do these death matches is like, I want people to be like, oh, what the fuck? Like, no. So the last thing anybody would do would be put a thumbtack in their mouth. So I want someone to put thumbtacks in my mouth and be like, why? Oh my God. And then I get kicked or whatever and I spit them everywhere, you know? Because, like, again, normal people would never think, I'm going to put a thumbtack in my mouth. Like, that's like the opposite of what you would do. So I want that kind of weird, like, visceral, like, oh, reaction. That's what I try to do sometimes when I'm doing the death matches.
Man, since I know you're a big Mick Foley guy. You know, one time I was going to work a match with Mick and he wanted to bust out some thumbtacks. And I said, man, you know, I consider myself pretty tough. And most professional wrestlers are tough. And then there's the kind of next level as far as, you know, man, I don't think we need it. So, you know, we didn't use them. I think end up using those with the Undertaker, and that same match you're talking about.
Oh, yeah.
So, anyway, dude, when you – y'all are working on in things and y'all are getting launched, you and your opponent, how do those sumbitches feel? And I've done a lot of things, but I ain't wrestling on 20,001 thumbtacks.
Thumbtacks aren't that bad because they're not – they don't go in that far, you know, because they're short. And also, when there's that many, it's kind of it sounds weird, but when there's that many, it's kind of hard to land on them and have them poke you. Because there's so many, and sometimes they're upside down, and they're like the flat part's there. But the only thing that sucks is that the worst part about it is they get stuck in your boots, and then you're slipping and sliding all over the place. And then after the show, I'm there with a pair of scissors taking out 300 thumbtacks out of the soles of my boots. It ticks me 25 minutes. That's the worst part about it. But I mean, landing on them, it pokes you a little bit. It doesn't. I wouldn't say it doesn't. I don't know. It doesn't hurt. A lot of the things don't. I'd rather do that than take a flat back.
Come on, man.
I'd rather take a face first into some tacks than take a flat back.
What is your draw or your lure to the death match? I mean, is it a sense of adrenaline, of defying the odds? Is it the ride you're taking on the people that they can't believe what in the hell they're seeing? Because, man, I had God dang, what was that guy's name? I had a death match guy on here a while back. I've been hitting him.
Joey Janela?
Who?
Joey Janela?
No, not Joey. It was another guy. Maybe it was Nick Mondo.
Yeah.
I've been hit with so many steel chairs. God damn it. Probably more than you, but you're catching me.
Yeah.
I haven't been thrown off as much shit as you have. God dang, it just seems like, and watching the video, man, he was just drawn to that stuff like a light bug.
Yeah. I think it's the same thing. I don't know what it was. It's when I was younger, I would watch FMW tapes from Japan, and then I would watch Foley, and then I got into some more of the indie deathmatch stuff. And I remember the first time I saw Masato Tanaka and Mike Awesome wrestle in ECW. And I saw Masato Tanaka and all his scars. And I was just like, man, he looks so freaking cool. And like Sabu's got that big scar across his chest. And I was just like, I want to be all scarred up. And I don't know. I just wanted to do it. It drew me to it. And then another one was Hayabusa. Because like he did the death matches. But he also could wrestle and do the high flying and the 450s and the moonsaults and all that stuff. And I was like, man, this guy's cool. He's wearing a mask. He looks awesome. So like, I don't know. I was drew to it because of that. I don't know why. I also like getting that reaction from the people. I like people being like, you're nuts. Like, what are you doing? You're crazy. I don't know why. I just like, I like that. I like that feeling. And I guess I have a high tolerance for pain, so it doesn't bother me. So just like, I'm like, whatever.
But does it thrill you? I mean.
I don't think it. I don't know.
I don't mean that in a weird way.
No, I know what you mean. No. I don't know. I just like it. I don't know if it thrills me. As I'm getting older, it's thrilling me less. Like I'm just getting to where I'm like, oh man, like, and it's not so much actually doing it. It's the aftercare where I'm all cut up and I'm like, oh my God, my arms are killing me. I'm all cut up. My face is, I'm bleeding everywhere. I'm going in public trying to go to the gym and I got blood running down. I'm in Denny's after the show and I'm eating my, you know, my moons over my hammy and I'm bleeding everywhere. And I'm just like, oh God, I like doing the match, but it's that aftercare that kind of gets me. But I don't know. It just gets a different reaction from wrestling fans. Because nowadays, wrestling fans have seen it all. But no matter what, as deathmatch wrestling's been around forever, it still gets them. They're still like, what? You're crazy. And they respect it. And like, I think maybe that's what I like about it, is that there's not a lot of people that do it. And the fans of deathmatch wrestling are huge fans, and they're really, really good to us. So like, I kind of like doing it for them.
Man, when you guys are doing a match like that, and back in my day, man, guys were chiropracting each other, adjusting each other. Harley Race almost pulled my head off trying to help me out. When you guys are doing a show, they have ambulances or doctors there in attendance?
Yes, a lot of times they'll have like an EMT. Just in case, because if it's like maybe not a doctor, sometimes they do for the deathmatch tournaments because everybody's doing it, but they'll at least have like an EMT there just to kind of patch you up to get you to the hospital if you need to go. But then a lot of, again, you know how it is with wrestlers, we're self-medicating ourselves. I always carry a thing of bandages and Aquaphor and cleaning alcohol rubs and like all that, because I clean myself up, or if somebody needs it, I'll clean them up and things like that. And again, I'll like, just because I've been wrestling so long, if a lot of times I'll just make sure that the younger guys are okay, and I'll wrap them up and be like, you need to go to the hospital, or you don't need to go to the hospital, you'll be fine, like, and let me clean you up and I'll clean them up, and you know what I mean, glue them up if I need. I always have super glue in my bag, and this try to take care of the boys because a lot of times people don't take care of the boys, and it's especially on the indies, it's hard, you know, because they don't have the $1 million backing to help us out and have a full medical team there. You know what I mean? They do what they can, you know, they have the EMTs.
No,
and
I
stuff.
Get it. That's why I'm asking.
But yeah, but like, but yeah, a lot of us are just like, you know, and also a lot of us just we already have scars anyway, so it's like, well, I'm not gonna go get stitches. Like, I'll be all right. It'll just glue up, and I'll just have another scar. You know what I mean? But I've been lucky. The only thing that I've really got really messed up is I cut my face one time pretty bad, and I had to get stitches then. And then one time, which was, I did a superplex through a door. Like, doors are a thing now in deathmatch wrestling. They buy those, like, cheap doors from Home Depot, and they're cheaper than tables, so they buy them. I hit my head and split the back of my head open. I had to go get, like, 5 staples in the back of my head. But other than that, I've been pretty lucky. I haven't had too many problems where I've had to go to the hospital. I had to go to the hospital in Japan one time because I had a piece of glass stuck in my leg, but that was they pulled it out and sewed me up.
Okay, you've got a bunch of cuts and stuff like that.
Yeah,
got a million scars. What about, you know, blown out shoulders? Or I know you got a PCL missing.
Yeah, I
what's the worst? Just I mean, broken bones or anything?
I broke my foot one time. I jumped off of this, like, again, me being thinking I'm a cruiserweight. I jumped off of this. I don't know, I guess the top of this room at this building, and I just landed feet first and I broke my foot. I tore my PCL. I didn't have to have surgery. I just kind of rehabbed that. To be honest, a lot of my injuries happen doing regular technical matches. You know, I don't really get too messed up doing the death matches. Like a few times I've had stitches, and I've been pretty lucky with injuries. Like, I have a herniated disc in my back. But it's not that bad. Like, I can rehab it, and like, it's not, it doesn't bother me too much. So,
is it the L or T level?
It's C. C? C?
Oh, that's C's up here.
C's up. Yeah, yeah.
I'm it's an expert
L,
on C's.
L, L,
yeah.
L.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like L1, L2, maybe. Yeah. It affects the sciatica. So, yeah. It's not like crazy bad. Just, you know, my leg hurts every once in a while, but I can rehab it and stretch, and it's fine. That's the worst I've ever had, though. I've been pretty lucky.
Dude, that one on your highlight reel, and we'll watch it in a minute, but that spot you were talking about,
yeah.
Dude, you're bleeding bad. You ever hit the panic button in there? I know you're a veteran. I know you've been doing this 17 years, but is there ever that time we were talking about a story with another guy where that just that blood crimson mask comes down? Is every time you think, hey, man, that's kind of
– That time, that okay. one what you just mentioned, there was glass in the ring. And I got clotheslined, and again, thinking I'm a cruiserweight, I backflipped the clothesline. And as I came down, my face just grazed the mat, and it just sliced it. And I didn't feel it because it went so deep. Like, it didn't hurt. And then I just remember, like, I couldn't see, and I was like, oh, man. And then I actually heard the blood coming out of my head. It was going... And I was like, oh, fuck. And I, like, put my hand on my face, and it was coming through my fingers. And, like, the ref was like, are you okay? And I was like, I don't know, man. And I was like, give me a second. And I was, like, trying to wipe it away, and it just wouldn't stop bleeding. And I was like, luckily, we were at the end of the match. So I, like, rolled over to the side, and there was, like, the EMT guys there. And I was like, wrap my head up, please. And they, like, mid-match wrapped my head up while my opponent was, like, setting up a table and stuff like that. And they wrapped my head up, immediately bled through it. I had to pop it off. It was like one more big spot for the finish, and that was it. And that they had a doctor at that one because it was like a big tournament. And I went straight to the back, and they started sewing me up right there in the back. And like, just it was bad. I thought I was going to be like really bad, disfigured because it was so bad. It almost hit my eye actually, but actually the scar cleaned up pretty good. Like, you can't really see it unless I really point it out. The only thing that's weird is that I know it hit a nerve because the top of my head. This is numb. Like, I can't feel like my scalp on right. the top of my head on the left side. So it must have hit a nerve or something. And like, but other than that, that was the worst time. That was because it was so much blood and it was coming out so fast. I was like, oh man, like I messed up this time. Like, this is bad. But it luckily worked out pretty good.
You messed up pretty bad this time. Dude, you've been through some shit. How many of these things have you had?
Oh, I'm not sure.
Is there ever a time, like, dude, if you're out there and both guys are getting color, do you worry about, hey, man, this other guy
for sure
clean?
I go and get tested every year. I'm actually going to start doing it twice a year. a lot of the tournaments that I do, everybody has to get tested. Japan, the people, the boys at Big Japan, they get tested. The community is very good about it nowadays, to where we all go get tested because we don't want that to happen. We're all looking out for each other. We're already putting each other in danger by having glass and barbed wire and all this craziness. There's no reason why we should not take care of each other when it comes to that. So, yes, that's definitely a concern. But a lot of the guys that I'm doing these with, I know them. And we're friends. And we all go get tested. So we don't want that to happen. Because back in the day, it was Wild Wild West. You know what I mean? Like, there was people, they weren't getting tested, and people were getting sick and having to quit wrestling and things like that, and having to get treatment for, like, Hep C and stuff like that. And it's like, that's scary, man. Like, you know, that affects your real life. That affects your home life, your girlfriend, your wives, your kids. You know what I mean? So, like, you don't want to – everybody nowadays is really good about it, which is nice.
And back in the day when I first broke in, I mean, it was like, hey, man, kid, you getting color tonight. Oh, what's that? Well – and then all of a sudden, you're over there making your first blade.
Yeah.
And so, man, all of a sudden, it's kind of, I mean, this is going to sound weird, but it's pretty damn fun.
Yeah.
You know?
It is.
It is. Am I wrong?
No, you're not. There's something, you know, back in the dark ages, there was something to bloodletting that they thought it was like a treatment for things. So, like, there's something, I don't know if it's an endorphin that pumps through your body when or it's an adrenaline thing. There's something about bleeding that you're just like, this is fun. Like, it feels good for some reason. And that's very weird. It sounds weird. But, like, only people who have done it know that, like, there's, like, this weird rush you get, and you, like, you feel better afterward.
It does, and it sure enhances a damn good match.
Yeah, it does.
And it enhances a damn good death match, right? Because the stakes are even higher. But back in the day, you know, you start learn the business. Okay, it's your turn to bleed. Okay, and then you're in a territory. You're gaffing. I was traveling with Tom Pritchard there for a while, and man, dude, he just, you know, he basically didn't have to blade every night. He just, you know, maybe once a week, and then he'd work the territory. You basically thump him, and he was bleeding again that night. And if you didn't think about it back then, but then as time progressed, and maybe the mid '90s or late '90s, and then all of a sudden, you know, things were, you know, with AIDS came in, what, the mid-'80s, whatever.
Yeah, late-'80s, yeah.
But everybody was still kind of, you know, it was still Wild Wild West.
You didn't know.
Up until, you know, late '90s, really. And if you're going out there, you're kind of thinking, okay, well, he's been partying kind of hard. Is he cool?
Yeah.
And so anyway, but there's been a couple people, you know,
end
up on the bad side of that.
I think a lot of the guys nowadays have learned from the generation before us that you can't be partying all the time. You know, it's okay to go out and drink and have a beer, but you can't be getting wild, man. Like, there's too many guys passed away too early. And I think there's a lot of us that don't, like, I don't drink. I don't do anything. I've never had alcohol. Like, I had alcohol one time when I was a kid. I drank a half a strawberry daiquiri wine cooler on New Year's Eve, 1999. It was Y2K. I thought, you know, world's going to end. That was the one time I had alcohol. I think a lot of us nowadays, we just know that you can't do that. It just wear and tear in your body, you know what I mean? And, like, the traveling and all that. And then you add all the partying on top of that. It's just like a lot of us don't do it now. You know, we don't want to end up like that.
Man, you're somewhat of an anomaly. I offered you coffee when you came over, and you don't drink coffee because you don't like the taste.
I don't.
And you don't drink.
Nope. A lot of people say that. Like, if you're like, it's weird that you – I've never smoked cigarettes. Never smoked weed, anything like that. Never.
Dude, props to you.
Thank you.
I mean, sometimes the wrestling crowd or entertainment crowd can be, you know.
Yeah, it's a party scene.
A little bit on the wild side.
Of course. I think nowadays, when it's wild side, is like everybody wants to go back to the hotel and play Nintendo. You know, they want to get down on their DS, or they're reading comic books, or we want to go see the new Marvel movie. You know what I mean? A lot of things like that. It's like, it's changed, and I think we've learned from past mistakes of people generations before us.
As you push the deathmatch envelope further.
True, true. That's
probably the trade-off here, mister.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's
you're
true.
Not going to come out smelling like a diamond in a goat's ass that easy. Look in the mirror. You look good. You're doing everything right for your health today, but if you're not planning for the what-ifs of tomorrow, then it's time you do. The problem is, historically, and rather ironically, the health conscious have overpaid and subsidized those who are less health conscious. It's not a conspiracy. It's just how life insurance works. Introducing Health IQ. Health IQ uses science and data to secure lower rates for people like you on their life insurance. If you're a runner or a cyclist, or if you're into CrossFit or another type of athlete, even a committed weekend warrior, if you're a vegetarian or vegan, then you deserve to be rewarded for your hard work with more affordable life insurance rates. Health IQ can save you up to 41% because physically active people have significantly lower risk for heart disease, cancer, and diabetes. And Health IQ is not just a lead generator. They take the customer through the entire process of applying, and the policy is underwritten by one of our top insurance partners. But these savings are exclusive to Health IQ. You won't find them anywhere else, and you must qualify to get a special rate. To see if you qualify, go to healthiq.com/Steve to take the proprietary Health IQ quiz. Depending upon your score, as well as other related qualifying factors, you can save up to 41% on your life insurance premiums compared to other providers. Again, that's healthiq.com/Steve to let them know we sent you and start the process with Health IQ quiz. There's no commitment, and you'll learn even more about potential opportunities to be rewarded for your commitment to living healthy. One more time, that's healthiq.com/Steve. Hey, when we're talking about deathmatch stuff, and it's who do you look up to? I mean, who's like the OG or the godfathers
of deathmatch wrestling?
I mean, because like I'm a Ric Flair guy, Dusty Rhodes. I mean, so those would be some of the guys that, oh man, you know. And I tried to emulate Ric Flair back in my early days when I was Stunning Steve. But you know, like who did you? Is there a guy you looked up to, or are they just you consider them kind of peers? But because those guys were doing a little bit before you.
For sure. Yeah. Foley, for sure.
Yep.
Funk, obviously.
Yep.
Masato Tanaka, for me. Hayabusa. Onita. I don't know if you know Onita. Yep. Onita. I actually wrestled Onita two years ago. Guys like that started that, like, explosion, like, that crazy, like, Matsunaga, too, from Big Japan. He was doing, like, the scorpion death matches and the alligator death matches and stuff like that. Those guys, for sure. On an indie level, like, when I got in, there was, like, Nick Gage, Zandig, Lobo, Nick Mondo, guys like that. Like, in the early CZW, I looked up to a lot of those guys. But, yeah, just, I don't know, man. It's just, like, Funk, for example, like, one of the greatest workers of all time, but is doing explosion ring death matches with Onita in a baseball field in Japan, in Yokohama, Japan. Like, that's nuts. But I like that kind of stuff. I like the dichotomy between he's like the NWA world champion, but also is a maniac and doing exploding death match. Like, that stuff's cool. That's why I like those guys. Again, the forefathers of like the death match scene is like Foley and Funk, really.
You know, he was a second generation guy, and he was, Dory was more of a technician. Terry's kind of a brawler. And all of a sudden, next thing you know, ECW comes around. I see Terry, I think he's probably in his mid 40s by then, and he's doing moonsaults off the top turnbuckle to the outside. And I'm thinking, man, what has happened to the world? But if Funk's doing it, it's either got to be cool or it has got to be a thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think you got to evolve, you know, and he knew that. It gave a second wind to his career.
It did.
You know what I mean? And like, he was the ECW world champion at what, 50 something?
Yeah.
That's, and then got back into WWE, you know, through that. And like, if his body was holding up, he'd still be doing it. You know?
No doubt.
He'd still be doing it. So like, I want to be like that. I want to evolve with the times and with my body and be able to be in the business and wrestle somehow. So evolving through that I love that kind of stuff, especially him like doing death matches. Like, that's cool.
Where do you draw the line, man? Like, if you go to a place and you know you're working with guy X and all of a sudden you guys are trying to put a match together and you kind of collaborating out there, looking at the toys or instruments at your disposal. I mean, what's too dangerous for you?
I don't like fire. The flaming table stuff.
I hate fire.
Yeah, it's an element, and you can't control it. So I've done it. I'm weary of it. I don't like it. Fire is a big one for me. I don't know why, but like a thing that got popular in deathmatch wrestling is toothpicks. They just stick toothpicks in stuff, like in boards or in like pieces of foam, and get hit with them, and then people, you know, they got toothpicks stuck in them. And so that, I'm like, no toothpicks. I'm not getting hit with a toothpick. Like, please don't. No, I don't want a giant splinter in me. You know what I mean? So that's probably where I draw the line.
Other I haven't that, seen the toothpicks. Oh, it's, but it doesn't seem like enough of a visual.
No, I agree.
The payoff ain't worth it.
No, it hurt. I'm sure it hurts. And again, I don't want a toothpick stuck in me. I already got glass coming out of my back as it is. I don't need wood stuck in me.
I just set my computer on the screen here. Where's this at?
That is in New Jersey for CZW. A lot of these clips will probably be from CZW in New Jersey.
Dude, you're pretty young there.
Yeah, that was 5-6 years ago. This was Cage of Death. Yeah, I was Wrestle Mance Warner.
I like that right there.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I Wrestle Mance Warner on that one. That was that one was real crazy. This is like a compilation of all my like crazy deathmatch stuff. Yeah, that was I got good color that
dude,
night.
Dude, you're bleeding like a stuck pig. Yeah. Here.
Right
there.
You
working baby here?
Yeah, all these. Yeah. I just recently started doing heel. Like all this stuff will be.
Okay, what we're watching right here is Ricky Shane Page pulling barbed wire. Is that your leg?
It's my arm.
It's your arm?
Yeah, I took a double stomp through a barbed wire board. It was on the ring apron in the guardrail, and when I got it twisted, and it just was stuck in my arm, and I couldn't get it out, so they had to cut me out. Those are the gusset plates, yeah.
Dude, that barbed wire was gnarly.
Yeah, it was stuck. That's when I cut my face real bad, and it was coming through my hands. That was really bad. Oh my God. I couldn't believe how bad that was. I was bleeding. That was the finals of Tournament of Death.
I've always wondered, when y'all breaking those light tubes,
yep.
Like I thought the fumes or whatever, I don't know anything about light tubes. Yeah. I always figured that was supposed to be like really hazardous to breathe in.
So,
is it or is it not?
It's not really hazardous, but there is there's a trace amount of mercury in it. So basically, I would need to inhale the contents of thousands of those light tubes directly into my lungs to be able to get any sort of like mercury poisoning or anything like that.
Gotcha.
Again, I'm not huffing that in. It's just breaking around me. So like you can't really, I've never gotten sick or anything like that from the light tubes. Like I think it's just, again, you're not supposed to do this stuff. You're not supposed to break glass. You're not supposed to do stuff like that. So like people just get freaked out by it. You know what I mean?
Now the glass from the light tubes, does that, I mean, obviously it's glass, but mm-hmm. it's thin glass, and you're going through plates and here in a little bit.
Yeah.
Will that stuff readily cut you, or is it kind of too weak to cut you?
No, it'll cut. Like, when I cut my face, that was light tube glass. Okay. The panes of glass, it's more of like a little bit of a poke because it's the safety glass. It's the tempered glass, and it's supposed to break. So it doesn't break into, like, big shards like a mirror or something would, you know? And so they'll cut you. The light tube glass will cut you worse than the panes of glass will because it breaks in, like, shards, and it's really thin and sharp.
Dude, that's a hell of a drop into that bed of nails, whatever that's called. Is that what it is?
Yeah, definitely a bed
How
of nails
does that
in
feel?
There.
Is it kind of like the thumbtacks? If there's a bunch of them, it doesn't hurt as
yeah,
much as you think it would?
Exactly. If there's enough nails in the bed of nails, it doesn't hurt. That was a big old bump off the scaffold there.
Dude, that is friggin' gnarly. Okay. Ricky Shane Page just got his hand stomped into a bunch of tacks on the damn mat.
Yeah.
That looked like it hurt.
The hands are bad. That's actually when I split my head open on that superplex. But yeah, the hands are bad because there's not a lot of meat there, so it goes into the bone a little bit if it gets too far. The hands are rough.
How'd that cinder block on the back feel?
That was rough. It's a cinder block, you know. They're made to build buildings.
Damn right. This is rough. Stomp into the barbed wire.
Yeah, I'm all about like doing weird stuff like on my mouth or face where like, cause again, people get freaked out.
See, like y'all land on these shopping carts and I don't remember back in the day, the shopping carts being used like that.
Yeah. I think you guys mostly just, people brought them out with stuff in them. Yeah. I don't know. It's just like anything, it evolves and you gotta like get crazier with it. Cause again, wrestling fans have seen it all. You know what I mean? There's not much out there that they haven't seen.
But from the stuff that you've done, I mean, I guess a dumb question. It can always be taken, you know, even to the next level.
Yeah.
But the next level, it's going to be pretty close to really being death because, I mean, you damn near define it in a calculated way.
Well, for sure.
You know, I get it.
Yeah. No, yeah. We've been lucky in the deathmatch community that someone hasn't gotten really, really hurt, you know? The only time I can think where someone – actually, Nick Gage, actually, his heart stopped one time. There was light tubes on the ropes, and he got thrown into it, and one of them – it stabbed him in his artery up by his chest, and he was bleeding so bad that they had to life flight him out. And in the helicopter, his heart stopped, and they brought him back, though.
Man, we're watching this clip. If you get on YouTube – check out Best of Ricky Shane Page. Now, there's a scientific wrestling reel.
Yeah.
But this is your deathmatch
stuff. This is mostly deathmatch stuff because, like, again, people just want to see that blood and guts.
My wife was watching The Horse Whisperer last night on her laptop. I was watching this on my side of the couch. And, dude, I've been around for a long time, and I've done some pretty, you know, cool or crazy stuff. But I'm over here, like, I'm selling. And my wife says, "What are you doing?" I said, "Man, I'm watching Ricky Shane Page do these death matches." She goes, "Why do you keep moving around?" I said, "I'm selling." So I'm selling for you. It was, I had to push the pause button. I said, "Man, this is intense."
Yeah. This is like everything I've ever done, this particular thing. But yeah, it's, man, they're. The fans, they love it, though.
But you're also digging it because, I mean, you know, you first of all, it hurts. It's devastating. But there's also, you know, there's so much online as far as taking care of your guy.
Yeah.
And he's trying to take care of you. Mm-hmm. You're trying to take care of each other. But by the same token, you're inflicting a lot of damage.
Yeah.
But it's a work.
Yes. That's the one thing I will say about all the deathmatch guys. We all really, really look out for each other because we know we're taking that extra added risk. So we're all really... we're really close and we're like, we have to take care of each other because, like, we're already adding this dangerous thing. There's no reason why we need to go out there and try to really beat somebody up. You know what I mean? So we're all really calculated risks. Like you said before, just like we make sure that as safely as we can do it, because again, it's glass and barbed wire. We take those extra precautions to make sure that we're okay.
What's the worst thing you've seen happen in a ring while you're at an event? You know, or like maybe in a match you were in, whether it was to you or your opponent.
You know, recently I was in Japan. I was at Big Japan. We did a big show at Sumo Hall, Ryugoku. And this guy, Sakuda, there was like a little balcony where the tunnel for the arena is. And they set up two tables. And he got up there maybe 10, 12 feet in the air. And he did a swanton. And he just missed.
Ooh.
And he just ass first. Hit it hard and totally missed the tables. And he basically just sat down from 12 feet in the air, and I could just see his face. He was just like, "Oh!" And I was like, "Oh my god!" Luckily, he didn't hurt anything. He didn't like break anything, but it was really rough. I was like, "Oh man, that's bad." I'm trying to think of deathmatch stuff. One time, this guy named Schlack, who's crazy. He's got face tattoos and like he's just like a crazy guy. And they had a filing cabinet. And he gave somebody like a sit out choke slam, a double choke slam onto this filing cabinet. And you know, like the braces of the filing cabinet that where the drawers go in,
yeah.
It shot through the metal and went right into his thigh, maybe 3-4 inches deep. And he came to the back and he was like, I'm messed up. We're like, what's wrong? What's wrong? He's like, my leg. And his leg was just draining blood out. And it was that like dark arterial blood, you know, because he got so deep and he hit an artery in his leg. So I took my shirt off and ripped it up and tied it around his leg. Someone else got their belt, and they put it up, and we got him, like, laid him on the floor, put his leg up, and we were all holding his leg. And then some of the there was a nurse and an EMT there. They came over and they were like putting pressure on it, and we were all like, you know, again, this is our friend. We don't want him to get hurt. And you know, and so like we were all like, oh my god, and luckily the ambulance came and they took him away and they got him fixed up. But it was just that dark blood. That's what scared me, because it was just like that dark arterial kind of blood.
You're starting to hear that medical background that the boys developed.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
like,
exactly.
Like us back in the day from the chiropractic, you guys dealing with so much blood. Like, hey, man, that's a different color blood. This is serious.
Yeah, like it was like, it's not that red, but it was dark. And we were all like, oh, man, he needs to go now. You know what I mean? So that's probably the worst. Like I said, I've been really lucky. I think a lot of us have been really lucky because we're taking more risks and doing crazier stuff. So it's like, we're very lucky that nothing really bad has happened, and you know, knock on wood, I hope nothing ever does, because that would be terrible. But like, it's just the risk you got to take, I guess, if you want to do this style.
Hey, I got on a another video right here, and this is some of your, you know, like regular work and stuff. What do you call that?
Chokeslam backbreaker.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is my more regular. That's Candice LeRae from NXT.
I thought I recognized
that. Yeah, yeah. This is, I think this video is from.
I love that. Gimmick chest stomp. What do you call that?
Oh, I just a boot stomp.
Boot stomp. That's nice.
Yeah, this is from like 2015, I think, 2014. That was Ruby Riott there. I've wrestled a lot. I've done a lot of intergender matches, too, which is a thing on the indies that happens a lot.
Dude, I love this. What's that?
The old duck a kick, hit a kick. I call the Amazing Red, if anybody knows Amazing Red, which they should. He's amazing. That's where I got that from. Because, again, I'm just an old-school independent wrestling fan. So like
and Amazing Red, super talented guy.
Oh, amazing.
But when you're 6'4", 300, man, you got that thing whipping around. Yeah. It's a whole different dynamic.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Oh, like, that's nice.
I like doing kicks.
Dude, you're really – I mean, you're laying your stuff in. It just looks snug to make contact, and you're taking care of people.
Yeah, like that – again, that's what it is. You got to take care of people, but you also need to make it look, again, like a fight, like we were talking about earlier. You got to make it look like a fight and a struggle. So you can't be whiffing on stuff. But again, I don't want to hurt anybody.
Dude, that's one of my favorite things, and there's fixing to be some more of them. What do you call it? You call it the Roaring Elbow?
Roaring Elbow, yeah.
Dude, I love that.
Thank you.
Was that Japan-inspired?
Masato Tanaka.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, that's where I got it from. Just watching ECW when I was younger, ECW was a big influence on me, and Masato Tanaka was one of my favorite. He's still going today. He's still killing it, and he's, you know, well into his 40s, and he's wrestling probably, you know, three times a week in Japan. He's just a maniac. But yeah, I love Masato Tanaka. He's one of my favorites.
I love the big top rope suplex you do, and I also love the suplex when you just throw a
suplex.
What do you call that?
I just suplex toss. I don't suplex even toss. Call like really name any of my moves.
What is that?
Oh, that's a top rope awesome bomb I do again. Mike Awesome, Masato Tanaka, like big ECW stuff. So I always do that top row power bomb. That kills my ass. I actually try to stop doing that, actually.
Okay, that was good. Just spinning back fist.
Oh, that was Eddie Kingston, yeah.
Too, and he fixed to start getting to some roaring elbows. Is that still Candice LeRae?
Yep, that was a.
How you feel about the intergender stuff?
I love it, man. I get why people aren't into it, you know.
Here's the thing, man. It's pro wrestling. When you sign up, you know, when you buy the ticket, you know, and it's intergender. So okay, you know what you're getting into. You know what to expect.
Exactly.
So expect it.
Exactly. I think it's really good, and I think it's good for the business to do it. It just gives more matchups, and in the because you know the girls can do it just as good as we can. So I really I'm all for it.
I love these elbow smashes.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I've always been a big fan of Masato Tanaka, so I've always been doing that roaring elbow. That was Ruby Riott right there that I wrestled, yeah. There's Pete Dunne right there, yeah.
Boy, that's a young Pete Dunne.
Oh, yeah, he was real young then. That was before the bruiserweight was even a thing.
That was a good one. Here's a good one. Bam.
Yeah, that was Pete right there, yeah. He was a real young looking then. He didn't have the long hair or nothing. I got to start doing this again. I kind of stopped doing it for a while.
Straight up baby there. Right?
Yep.
Yeah. I look like a skateboard guy.
I got that like that long hair, yeah.
The Steve Austin Show. The Steve Austin Show.
The drive to March has begun for college basketball's finest, and the NBA conference contenders are looking to make a move leading into this week's All-Star break. So go visit our good friends and exclusive partner at Podcast One. Bet online to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Sign up for a free account and make sure to use that promo code, Podcast One, for your 50% sign-up bonus. The NBA's schedule may be taking a break, but the action on All-Star Weekend will be in full effect as Team LeBron takes on Team Giannis in this year's All-Star Game. Not your style? Check out the slates this weekend in college basketball. Number 1 Baylor hosts number 13 West Virginia, Notre Dame at Duke, and number 2 Gonzaga heads to Pepperdine. Visit our good friends and exclusive partners of Podcast One, Bet Online, to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business for this momentous occasion. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use the promo code PODCAST1 for a 50% sign-up bonus. Again, that's BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts and exclusive partners of Podcast One Sportsnet.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
I was just going over my scouting report with Ricky Shane Page, and I've enjoyed a lot of your matches.
Thank you.
Really solid work. And let's get off the deathmatch stuff and lighten up a little bit, go a little bit to some scientific style stuff. Man, I really enjoyed a match you had with John Silver and Beyond Wrestling. Josh Briggs, I enjoyed that match. I enjoyed your highlight reel. I like that roaring elbow. Good vignettes on Twitter. Doing some promo stuff, trying to promote some matches.
Yes.
Going to your finish, is that, or one of your finishes, or one of your moves, is that an ace crusher or a diamond cutter?
You know, actually, it's the twist of fate.
Twist of fate.
I love, I didn't talk about it earlier, but I love the Hardy Boys. I have always loved the Hardy Boys. That's why I do the Swanton. I do the twist of fate. The Hardy Boys were a big influence on me. The first ladder match was in Cleveland. The tag one with Edge and Christian versus
those
the Hardys.
Those were pretty intense, man.
That's another influence on me is that kind of stuff. Yeah, I love the Hardy Boys.
And those guys were really pushing the envelope back in the day.
Yeah, they were.
I mean, because, you know, everything had to lead to where you guys are now.
Yeah.
And like you said, that's kind of been the progression.
Mm-hmm.
And then it took a little bit of a right turn.
Yeah.
And kept going.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, I love the Hardy Boys. I've always been a big fan of them.
What did you think when you watched the Hardys, Dudleys, and Edge and Christian go out there and have those matches? Because, dude.
Losing my mind.
Yeah, we were at WrestleMania 17, and I was working with The Rock in the main.
Mm-hmm.
But those guys went up there and just ripped it. Do you remember that match?
Yeah, of course I do. That match was crazy.
Yeah.
Just like the whole build up to it was great, you know, because the Dudleys with the tables, and then the Edge and Christian and the Hardy Boys had already had that ladder match, and just the whole build up to the actual TLC, it was like, it was crazy. It was just like so innovative. They're doing really high risk stuff, and again, like seeing a big guy like Bubba going out there and doing stuff off the ladders was really inspiring too, because like, again, I'm a bigger guy, but I want to fly. So like, it's just, I like when people take things and just innovate them and do something groundbreaking, because people will always remember that match. Like, you know what I mean?
And I like the way you were talking about, structuring a match or building a match, whether it's a regular wrestling match or a death match, mm-hmm. you're building. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, start off with a crescendo and then work backwards.
Exactly.
So there's something to it. But I always thought that, and I thought they were all good. I mean, Edge and Christian, super smart. And then Hardy Boys, I mean, super smart. And then Bubba Ray and Devon. All of those guys together, the combined chemistry, but in watching a lot of, you know, they're all going to be in the Hall of Fame. Bubba, my point is, Bubba lines out a really good match.
Yeah. Is he usually, he's like the ring general?
No,
probably.
No, I think they're all ring generals.
Really?
And, yeah, I think every single one of them.
Yeah, yeah.
But I've watched, you know, a lot of his single stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And I watched the way he's kind of out there in the ring talking and listen to him on Busted Open Radio. You know, he's very opinionated.
Yes.
He has a very valid opinion on pretty much everything current. But I just watching those guys, and maybe it was Devon, but Bubba, just in talking to him, just psychologically.
He's very smart, yeah. I listen to Busted Open, actually. Yeah, it's a great show.
Yeah, those guys are good. Him and
yeah,
Dan McGregor.
Yeah.
Shout out to them guys. that great top rope suplex you do, the throwing suplex. What do you call that?
Suplex toss.
Suplex toss.
Yeah, I'm simple with that stuff.
That big boot, the big boot stomp,
mm-hmm.
and then the highlight reel song. Who did that for you? Right where you want to be.
Oh,
the artist was A Day to Remember.
Yeah.
A happy song.
Yeah, that's a kind of my
6'4", 300-pound baby face.
Yeah, that's what I always am. Yeah, there's a kid named Bless who makes music videos, and he just made it for me. And just, you know, one of these kids on the internet that's just really good at making videos and just loves wrestling, and he made it for me. And there's this place called the MV Zone. They used to make videos all the time, and like, he just made one for me. Yeah. I love that kind of, like, that's how I got into wrestling as well, from the internet, watching music videos of people, and you know what I mean, like that. I like that kind of stuff. That's kind of like why I'm trying to do these things on Twitter, where I'm making these videos, and like, I want to do something more than just selfie camera yelling, you know, next Friday I'm gonna beat you up. Like, I'm trying to do more things like that and tell more stories.
I was the match with AR Fox, use a choke breaker, use a powerbomb off the top. It was a really good match. But what popped me on the match is the goddamn commentary. Who are them guys commentating? Because that was GCW.
Oh, that was Beyond.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
Probably Drew Cordero. I'm not sure who the other person was.
Well, the guys are just cussing. And here's the thing. Like, I grew up, you know, listening to Jim Ross, whether it was in Mid-South Power Pro or NWA, and then he came to WWF and, you know, he was yelling our names. And so Gordon Sully was before that, Lance Russell down there. And, you know, there's those key guys. And the commentary, you know, has to fit the product. So I thought the commentary fit the match, you know, respectively.
Of course.
You know, it's indie. It's different.
It's great, gritty, a little grimy.
Yeah. And I just really enjoyed it because it fit what was going on.
Yeah, that's Drew Cordero. He's like the executive producer of Beyond Wrestling, and he's usually doing commentary. Actually, me and him were friends through Backyard Wrestling, and I actually helped him start Beyond Wrestling, and like it's become like a pretty big powerhouse on the indie scene. So it's really fun to watch that grow as it has, and I think they have 2 million subscribers on YouTube.
Yeah.
I
think I saw that.
I think it's literally like WWE's number one, maybe like Ring of Honor or something, and they're like the number third like viewed wrestling product on YouTube, which is like crazy. It's just a little. It's just an indie company. You know what I mean?
Man, if you're at home and you're not traveling to do a death match or whatever, if you're going to watch wrestling, I mean, do you still watch WWE or do you watch Impact? Do you find AEW or Ring of Honor?
I can't. You know what? I don't get Ring of Honor where I live.
I don't even. I never can find them.
Some of them are hard, but my phone is. You know, YouTube is a godsend. When I was younger, it was like I had to get a VHS tape if I wanted to watch Japanese deathmatch wrestling. Now you can just go on YouTube and type it in. But yeah, I try to watch wrestling. I watch the network because again, a lot of my friends are there. And I want to watch my friends. I enjoy watching my friends succeed. So I want to see them do their thing in WWE and NXT and things like that. There's so many streaming services nowadays that you can just go and watch. So there's independent wrestling TV that you can get, which is $10 a month. There's Beyond's YouTube. They put free stuff out all the time. There's like the High Spots Network. There's like all these crazy things that you can just stream wrestling all the time. It's great. And indie wrestling, WWE, Impact, AEW, like you can just – it's at your fingertips at all times. It's a little sensory overload sometimes. You don't know what to watch. But I try to stick to my friends and I have friends in every company. You know, I'm friends with MJF, so I like to watch his stuff in AEW. Pete in WWE and, and Ruby Riott's one of my friends. Like I like to watch them do their stuff, you know what I mean? So like I'm always watching wrestling. And then I like watching indie wrestling, my peers that, I'm on shows with. I can watch, a live show. Beyond Wrestling was doing a live show every Thursday. An indie company was doing like a live show every Thursday that you could go and watch. So like that's unheard of, especially technology has helped out indie wrestling so much. It's really fun to be able to just like, okay, it's Saturday night. I don't have a show this weekend. I'm going to watch something Glory Pro in St. Louis. And I know all the guys on the shows. I get to see what's going on in the indies right now, who's popular, who's not, things like that. It helps out with your career because what people, the fans are looking for.
No kidding. And to know what everybody else is doing.
Yes.
How is the indie scene right now?
It's the best it's ever been.
How busy are you, or how busy do you want to be? Are you as busy as you want to be?
I can choose. That's how big it is. I can have three shows a weekend if I want. If I don't want, I don't have to. I can go to England. I can go to Japan. I started in 2001, which was like kind of the tail end of the Attitude Era. So then I lived through that 2005, 6, 7, where I was wrestling in front of 15 people and the business was just down as a whole.
Yeah.
And then it started coming back up. And now, with AEW, Impact, Ring of Honor, WWE, everybody's eating. You know what I mean? Like everybody's making money. It's like you can be as busy as you want to be. As long as you're good, you can be as busy as you want to be. So it's the indie scene is the best it's ever been. Like I've been traveling this past year. I've been traveling the most I've ever traveled in my whole career, like driving, flying, everything, going to different countries and things like that. Like last year I was in Mexico, England, Wales, Scotland, Japan, Spain. That was all in 2019. You know what I mean? So like it's the indie scene is crazy. And again, it's just a testament to the big guys too. WWE and AEW, they're doing well, so it's going to trickle down to us, to the indies.
Did any of the companies that you just named ever reach out to you and say, "Hey, Ricky Shane"?
I've had recently two companies reach out. Nothing concrete. I would love to. Obviously, I mean, if you don't want to be in the WWE or one of those companies, there's like really what's the point, like that's it for me. I would like to have a good run on TV somewhere, and then I would like to be a coach or an agent or a producer. That I like that role. I like to be able to help the younger guys and to pass on the knowledge that I've learned through my travels to do that. So that's my, in my head, that's my retirement plan, is I would like to have a good run, WWE, AEW, Impact, Ring of Honor, because everybody's doing good. They're all those places are good places to work. So, like, one of those I would like to do, and then, you know, get my few more years in, and then I would like to be able to work backstage and help that way, because I really like that part of the business.
How far down the road are you looking, just as far as how you're feeling, what you want to do?
My goal is I want to wrestle 20 years. Like, and I'm almost there. Another year, oh, 2 years, I'll have it, 20 years. I'll be okay with stopping then, but I'll go as long as I can. As long as my body holds up, I want to have a life after wrestling. You know what I mean? I want to be able to have kids and be able to play with them and have a normal life and not be crippled and messed up. But I also want to be a part of the business and, like I said, be able to teach and things like that. So if I make it to 20, I'll be okay with in-ring not doing it anymore. I think I will always be a part of the business in one way or another. I'll open a school. I'll run my own show, indie shows. Something. I always want to be involved in wrestling because I love it so much.
Have you ever been married?
I haven't.
God dang. No coffee, no alcohol. Ain't been married. Well,
yeah. That's why I've been wrestling so long.
You're
no stress
all
in my
crazy
life.
Crazy stuff you do. You're pretty damn smart.
I always have a girlfriend, but I've never been married. I'm like a habitual boyfriend.
So you think down the road you want to have kids?
Oh, 100%. I love kids.
Yeah.
I absolutely love kids. My best friend has two kids, and they're like – they call me Uncle Ricky, and like I love those kids to death. I would do anything for them. And just having that kind of relationship with, you know, a younger – because my nephew's two and the other one's 3 months old. They call me Uncle. They're not my uncle. But I love those kids, and I would do anything for them. So I can only imagine what it'd be like to have your own kid. And I think it's probably 10 times that feeling. So I definitely will have kids at some point. But I think I don't want to have kids and be like, oh, hey, I'm going to Japan for 4 months. See you later. You know what I mean? Like, I think if I have kids, I'm going to have to slow down. So I think once I slow down or get more established in wrestling where I actually have like a good job, or if I'm a producer or agent, or I'm on TV and I'm making good money, then I'll be like, okay, I'm going to set my kids up to have a good life. But if I'm tooling around on the indies, like, I don't want to, you know what I mean? I think that's a weird sacrifice to make, to not make that big money, you know what I mean?
Well, but whether you're tooling around on the indies or you're with a company in a cush spot, or you're still in the grind.
Yeah, of course.
I'm just saying that the grind is, or the hustle is still the same.
Yeah.
And so you're still gone.
Yeah.
No matter what
that's true.
You're on.
Yeah, that's true.
Being gone is being gone.
Yeah, no, you're right, yeah. I don't know. I love kids, though. No doubt in my mind I'll have kids.
Hey, you and me got a mutual friend.
Okay.
Gregory Irons.
That's true.
How did you meet that sorry son of a bitch?
So he started wrestling, training around 05, maybe 06. And I had already been wrestling for a few years. And he was doing, like, security at an indie in Cleveland. And I always knew him through that, just, you know, kind of casually knew him. And then we started traveling out to Chicago, and then the whole CM Punk thing happened. I was with Greg when that happened. I was on that show when the whole CM Punk thing happened. And
which CM Punk? Which thing?
When CM Punk won the title and then he left, and yeah, then he showed up on an indie show and he, like, came out and he, like, put Greg over on the mic and all that, and then he, like, went back and him and Cena had that big crazy match at TLC. So that I was there for that show when Punk came out at the indie show and, like, put Greg over and all that stuff. And then we just became friends through traveling and things like that, and then now we're roommates. He lives with me. It's like, I, you know, my little 32. You know, you were talking about me having kids. I already have one. It's Greg. He's a 32-year-old baby I have to take care of. But there's a funny story I could tell you about him. So when he first came on your podcast, he had been waiting for you to call him to set it up. And he's like, man, I got Stone Cold's number. He's going to call me. And I was like, oh, that's cool. He changed the ringtone on his phone for when you call him that your theme music plays. And I was like, you, all right, come on. So I have a Bluetooth speaker in my bathroom so I can listen to music or podcasts when I'm taking a shower. And so when you turn the light on, my phone connects to it automatically. So he's in the shower. I hear it, and I was like, oh, my phone's connected to it. I pull up YouTube. I wait till he's in the shower. He's probably mid-washing his hair. I pull up your theme music on YouTube. I play it. You hear, and all of a sudden you just hear, he's slipping and falling out of the shower, and he's like, what? He's like, you son of a bitch. He was like, why did you do that? I was like, I'm dying. I'm right outside the bathroom. I'm dying laughing because he just probably had soap in his hair just trying to get to that phone to answer because you were going to call him. It was so funny.
Hey, on Indy scene, you guys ribbing each other? Is everybody pretty square?
No, that happens. There's some ribs going on. All right. Well, I'll tell this one. I am a student. His name's Derek. Derek Direction. He wrestles in Cleveland mostly. He's just one of those kids that's – he's happy to be there, but sometimes he just gets on your damn nerves, and you're like, all right, Derek, shut up. And one of my friends was like, hey, man, I got to see Alice. And I'm like, okay. I was like, well, let's put it in Derek's drink. So we put a Cialis in Derek's drink, and he's drinking it, and you know, he's just sipping on an energy drink, and we put it in there, and we're driving home, and we were gonna go to a strip club on the way home, you know, boys being boys. So we go to the strip club, and he's just like being real quiet in the back, and he's like, I'm like, what's wrong, dude? He's like, I don't know, man. I just it's awkward, but I just like, I just got a boner. And I was like, oh yeah? And he's just like, yeah. It won't go away. And I was like, maybe finish your energy drink, knowing full well that the rest of that pill is in there. So I was like, why don't you finish your energy drink? And he's like, yeah, maybe. So he takes it to the face. We go to the strip club. I see him awkwardly trying to hide it, and he's flipping it up. You know, he's trying to be all awkward the whole ride home, the whole time in the strip club. And we go home. He's like, I just don't understand what happened, man. And I was like, Derek, we put a dick pill in your drink, man. He's like, you motherfuckers. Like, well, come on. And we were just like, ah, it's innocent fun, man. Come on. You know it's funny. But, yeah, I don't think it goes to the extremes that it used to back in the day, but there's still some ribbing going on the road. You got to keep yourself entertained. You're driving, you know, so far. You got to do something.
The boys would do really interesting things to entertain themselves. And God dang, back in the day when we was going back and forth to Germany or England, and we'd be on those buses, man, everybody, well, for the most – part, everybody was kind of, you know, partying, and if you passed out, you were going to lose your eyebrows, your mustache, or get sharpied up.
Yeah.
I mean, you were going to get tortured. And then, you know, of course, there was a guys, you know, back in the day, there was a sleeping pill called Halcyon, and you know, he'd call it H-bomb. And man, a guy just dust him up. And I never messed with that stuff because that's on the serious side of a rib. But, you know, guys H-bomb each other, whatever. It's like, man, that ain't my cup of tea. And I'll never forget a story. Old Junkyard Dog one time was in the dressing room, and he had a big gulp. And a dude came, sat down beside him. I can't remember the guy's name. He just kind of just casually started sipping JYD's drink. And JY just kind of like, man, really? So he just took his Visine bottle,
poured
his Visine in his own drink. He wasn't going to drink it no more. Sure enough, dude picked up a drink. Boy, about 30 minutes later, man, he was just on the floor moaning. So he got him good.
Yeah, there's a couple that little ones that I always do at shows. You know, people always peek through the curtain, the entrance curtain. And in the indies, there's really no gorilla. There's just a curtain. And then you're there in front of the crowd. So if someone's peeking, I'll just go behind them and just boot them in the ass. So they come out the entrance and they're like, oh, and they go back. And the other one I always do is when they come out, they have a title belt on, they'll be wearing it. And I'll wait for them at the entrance. And as soon as they walk through the entrance, I grab the strap and just take it off so it falls down when they come out. And they're like, oh, they're like grabbing their belt, trying to look all cool, and their belt's on the ground.
Those are two harmless ribs.
Yeah.
Like you're talking about, we kind of had the same setups way back in the day. We they'd be curtain sellouts.
Yeah.
And then, you know, just kind of rib them. You know, it wasn't two guys working or whatever. Just grab the curtain and yank it back. And there's 10 heels and babies because it's a curtain sellout trying to watch whatever match is going on in the ring.
Yeah.
They all got exposed. But so what's next for you? Going to England.
Yep.
And then what?
I'll be in England for a week or so, and then I got a big death match coming up in February.
Where? With who?
It's me and Nick Gage at Game Changer Wrestling, February 15th at the Showboat Casino. It's like the big death match for the GCW World Title that just got set up last night at that show in Hollywood, and that's a big one coming up. Other than that, I just want to keep getting better. That's always my goal is to just keep and keep getting better. And I'm honestly like, I want to be signed somewhere so I can tell those kind of stories on a national level and learn that TV side of it. Cause I know the indie side and I'd like to be able to get on that other side and learn the TV style, but it's hard with the death matches. Cause like it's a bit of a taboo thing, but I'm trying.
Yeah. But dude, I think your in-ring work holds up with just about anybody on the current scene. I mean, with respect to, you know, 6'4", 300, I mean, you're not going to, you know, do cruiserweight stuff, but yeah. Dude, you can work.
Thank you.
So good luck to you. Tell people where they can find you on social media, a website, or whatever people can find Ricky Shane Page.
Everything is Ricky Shane Page. It's Ricky with the E, R-I-C-K-E-Y. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, it's all at Ricky Shane Page. And then Pro Wrestling Tees, obviously. Everybody's got a Pro Wrestling Tees now. Same thing, Ricky Shane Page. That's where you can find all my stuff. Just, you know, check out the indies. That's all I can say. You know, Game Changers doing – GCW's doing really good stuff. There's a place in Canada called Alpha One doing really good stuff. Like, Beyond's great. The indies are – so good right now, and I think a lot of people aren't seeing because it's not in that mainstream, but I think a lot of people would enjoy it and be able to find people that they like, because there's, again, the indie scene is like a buffet right now. There's a little bit of everything, and you can pick out what you like and watch it, and the way the technology is nowadays, you can just pick and choose what you want to watch. So it's like it's nice.
Well, man, I tell you what, you know, me coming from you know, the grassroots that I started with and ended up in WWF, you know, and being a just still as many years as I've been retired, still a wrestling fan, I try to watch a little bit of everything, but I haven't seen enough of the indie stuff. And so when my producer said, hey, man, we'll get Ricky Shane Page on the show, I said, all right. So then I started researching. And, you know, a couple times I've talked to some indie guys, and I really enjoy that scene. So it's good to see that the indie market is thriving so much and so many guys are rising to prominence and making a good living doing it and doing what they love to do, because, you know, I just love the business. So it's and like I said, just going to the commentary of that match with you and A.R. Fox, or god dang, you know what, before we go home,
okay,
the wheelchair match.
Oh. I was wondering,
Marion Fontaine.
I was wondering if you watched that.
Jesus Christ. Yes, but I'm almost sorry I did. You talk about a business killer. At least I saved this for the end of the podcast. No, dude, I mean, it was laugh out loud. I mean, it was a little tongue-in-cheek or laugh out loud funny.
Yeah.
It was entertaining as fuck.
Yeah.
But obviously to pull off the stuff that you guys did was, how did that come about?
So that's old wrestling, which is it's kind of like a satirical thing. It's like set in the Prohibition era of the United States. So it's 1930s, 1920s. And I play a judge, a Prohibition judge, who's like a crooked judge who's on the take. But so he's drinking hooch and helping the moonshiners, but also acting like he's not, basically. And I was in a body slam match. And I got body slammed. And it's funny because we had this big cage match coming up, and we were getting to that, and we had this body slam match, and I was like, man, how am I going to sell this body slam? Like, I need to sell it really silly. And the only thing I could think of for whatever reason was when Vince McMahon, when he blew out his quads and he was in the ring and he was just sitting there going like putting his hands up and like freaking out. I was like, okay, that's funny. That's how I'll sell this body slam. So we did the body slam. I boom, body slam, I lose, and I'm selling. I'm sitting there like doing the Vince McMahon sell, and then I was like, oh, there's a wheelchair. I was like, pull me out in the wheelchair. And then I was like, man, what if I'm in a wheelchair? And like, that's how I'm trying to get out of this cage match, is like, well, I'm in a wheelchair, I can't wrestle. And so that was the whole thing, is like, okay, well, you have to wrestle. You're going to have to wrestle in this wheelchair. So I was like, okay, that's really funny. Let's do that. So I got this wheelchair and I painted it white because I wear all white there. And I had it. I used to have a ring in a school in Cleveland. And I had that wheelchair in the ring for about 2-3 weeks before that. I'm running the ropes with it, making sure I can turn it. I'm doing willies and like I'm like using my students and like trying to figure out moves I can do and stuff like that. And Marion Fontaine's one of my best friends I've known forever. And we came up backyarding together, and he was the perfect person to be able to do this match with. And we just did it. And you know what's funny is I did another wheelchair match after that. I did two, because the first one went so well and the crowd and everybody liked it so much. I did another one with Matt Cross. We did a 2 out of 3 falls match, and the first 2 falls were in the wheelchair. And then the second fall, a snake oil salesman came out, gave me a tonic, and all of a sudden my legs were fixed. And then the third fall was just a regular match. old wrestling's really fun. Anybody should seek it out. Like, the stories are really fun to watch.
Dude, it was so, I didn't know the storyline going into it. It was so far out of left field, and then about 3 minutes left in a match, I'm just like laughing my ass off because the hilarity just keeps building. It was awesome.
So I'm
kidding you about a business killer. You got the intended response from me.
Yeah.
Hey, I want to point people out to the Ricky Shane Page 2014 highlight video. That's you doing your regular stuff. I really enjoyed that. You ought to check that out if you're on YouTube and check out Ricky Shane in action. Some of the highlight stuff he does. But then also on the deathmatch side, if you just go best of Ricky Shane Page, that's the best of his deathmatch stuff. It's just highlight clips. I'm sure there's other stuff out there.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed those clips. And I enjoyed the match with Josh Briggs. I enjoyed the match with John Silver. Check those out. And A.R. Fox as well. I enjoyed all of them, damn it. And I ain't blowing smoke. You know, good work is good work.
Thank you.
Is there a death match out there that you're extremely proud of that's on YouTube that you would recommend people to watch?
That's on YouTube.
Are they all pay-per-view?
Yeah, they might maybe on a streaming service. It was the finals of Tournament of Death 2016. It was me and Matt Tremont. Matt Tremont is a guy that definitely is underrated. You would love him. He can cut a dang promo, and he will get your blood flowing and goose pimples going. Matty is one of the best, and just regular wrestling too. Like, again, he's one of those guys that can work but does death matches. Matt Tremont's one of the best in the business right now, and that was like a big finals of the death match. He had two matches, I had two matches going in, and we just do this crazy. That was when I split my face open.
Yep.
And I really, really, that's probably my best work, storytelling wise, and just match wise, because Matt is so good that it's hard to have a bad match with him.
I'll check it out. And if you're listening, try to find it somewhere. Hey, Ricky Shane Page, glad to have you on the show. It was real nice to meet you. Tell our buddy Gregory Irons I said hello, and I ran out of hats. So you get a Broken Skull Ranch, but he ain't got one. Nice meeting you.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right, everybody, give me a go home. It's time to wrap up this podcast and ride off in the sunset. But before I do that, I want to thank my guest, Ricky Shane Page, for cruising by the crib and shooting the breeze with me. I tell you what, man, I always like talking to some of these indie guys. You know, they got a different take on things. And Ricky Shane Page is certainly, you know, one of the best at the death match scene. And maybe he's trying to fade out a little bit and get more into the storytelling aspect or more into producing. The guy has a wealth of knowledge about the business. He's obviously a student of the game. Respect his work, and it was good talking to him. Ricky, best of luck to you in all of your future endeavors, and safe travels and safe landings. If you want to reach me here on the podcast, send an email to questions@steveaustinshow.com. And don't forget to rate and review the Steve Austin Show on Apple Podcasts and tell your friends to check us out. Hey, man, I got a lot of great news about Broken Skull IPA. It is just exploding across the country. It has been received extremely well on the East Coast. They're drinking as much as we can send. Thank you to New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts for all of your support. Everybody over in Oregon, Texas, we are trying to get down your way. We are on our way to Texas ASAP. We're going to be a lot of places in 2020. And the Broken Skull IPA, we're here in the craft beer scene, just keeps growing and growing. You can find us in California, all over California at Whole Foods and Total Wines. If you ain't in Cali, check out the ElSegundoBrewing.com website, because we might just be headed your way. And for those people on the East Coast, the places I just named, you can find a location nearest you to purchase the best IPA in the United States of America. And that's the bottom line. And folks, don't forget, I've got some King of Attitude shirts and some Broken Skull Ranch shirts available at ProWrestlingTees.com/Steve Austin. And if you're looking to buy a badass pocket knife, I got two for your ass. Everybody should have a pocket knife, and that's the bottom line. Cold Steel are the ones who make this badass pocket knife. The Broken Skull and the Working Man. Find them at my Amazon store. Amazon has the best price on both knives. Just go to Amazon.com/shop/Steve Austin. I'd like to say one more thank you to all the fine sponsors of the Steve Austin Show, especially Geico, Zorro, Health IQ, and Bet Online. That's how I'm able to do this podcast for you twice a week for free. Please support them because they support us. And if you need more info, check out the show description to this episode for details. Hey, folks, if you see me out on the trails, I'll proudly be riding a Kawasaki. And that's the bottom line. Until next time, my name is Steve Austin, and I will catch your ass down the road.
This has been a Podcast One production. Download new episodes of The Steve Austin Show every Tuesday at PodcastOne.com. That's PodcastOne.com.
Are you a Survivor fan? Then you have got to check out Rob Has a Podcast, hosted by a Survivor competitor, Rob Cesternino. Every week, he'll be recapping the upcoming season of Survivor so you don't miss any of the action. Plus, Rob is celebrating his 10th year of podcasting, so you know he's a total pro. Be sure to subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, and many of your favorite podcast listening apps.